joining us this morning from the city of Eureka, Mr. Brian Gerving. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you.
You got the official vest on, huh?
That's right.
Just in case you get lost, they know where to return you?
Exactly. Or I don't forget where I work.
Yeah. Well, oh, that would be funny. Have one upside down. So then you can use the line.
That's right.
Yeah. Right now, you know, either it's upside down or it's backwards, depending on how you're trying to read it.
Right.
All right. Are you ready for our question for this morning?
Lay it on me.
Oh, this one. Why are most traffic signals and markers yellow?
I don't know. Why?
Yellow is the most visible of all colors in the spectrum.
There you go.
It can be seen from the farthest distance, and it's conspicuous in all lighting conditions. This makes it a natural choice for traffic signs, which oftentimes have to be seen from great distance. You didn't know that? I still argue it's orange instead of yellow.
You colorblind?
No. I just, it was always more of an orange thing for me than a yellow thing.
There's so many different yellows, right?
Yeah, like gold. Yep. Not that I've seen much gold lately. But, oh, geez. Well, before we get into the main topic, which I'm sure no one's going to be surprised about, quick question, and we talked a little bit about it before the show. The city has got new rigs that are driving around bright and shiny and stuff, and I have the propensity for reading license plates and license plate trims. And I did a double take, and then I drove around the block and did a double take again. Why does the truck say Crown Motors Reading on them? Because, I mean, that seems to be running counter to everything that we talk about.
Sure. Yeah, a couple of years ago, the city moved to a model where we started leasing vehicles from Enterprise. And those vehicles have to be delivered to a dealership, and they do the inspection and all of that, and then they ultimately deliver them to the customer. And at the time that we executed that agreement with Enterprise, the agreement was those vehicles come to a local dealership for delivery and processing. And what happened is that Enterprise has a different definition of local than the city does. And we've made it clear that with all the subsequent deliveries, they're going to come to a dealership in Eureka.
And considering how they were Fords.
That's correct. And I've talked with Mr. Harper about this matter. Yeah.
Just once?
A couple of times.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I didn't want to make sure that Trevor didn't drop the ball on this
one. No, not at all.
Yeah, okay. Are there other arrangements like that that have, I mean, most folks think that you buy and you run them into the ground and, you know, you maintain them and that kind of stuff. Are there other lease agreements that the city is entering into now to do business a little differently?
That's really one of the first models of that kind. You know, there are things like software where you used to buy a piece of software and you had it until you had to upgrade, that kind of thing. So much more now, you're buying software as a service where you're subscribing annually. And so that's a little bit different. This is kind of analogous to that, but really what we looked at is we were buying vehicles and literally running them into the ground to the point that they had no value, and we really believe that they were less safe than newer vehicles, not as many safety features. They weren't as reliable. They weren't as functional, and so we did an analysis looking at the sale price of the vehicle, the sale price at the end of the lease term, the fuel economy, all those things put together, and with the most conservative estimates, it really did seem to be the best financial choice for the city. Plus, it you know, it serves to have a better, safer, more functional fleet that with more uptime.
Are you guys getting pressure to buy the green?
Yeah, well, of
or
course.
The plug-ins?
And, you know, we have we're extremely interested in being as sustainable as possible, being as environmentally responsible as possible. And this year we will be buying the first of our electric vehicles. The fact of the matter is they still don't pencil.
You're paying a premium for them.
You are, yeah. And when you look at the cost per mile between, say, a four-wheel drive extended cab pickup and an electric vehicle, when you're leasing them for what term makes sense for each of them, it's about 2.5 times as much per mile for the electric vehicle. Be that as it may, we still have a responsibility. The council has set certain standards for our sustainability, and we are going to be, for the vehicles where it makes sense, moving to electrified vehicles.
So the financial difference doesn't enter into the equation?
It's not a huge difference because of the low number of miles that those vehicles put on.
What about those, I called them egg cars, you know, a couple of years ago, right? Or the equivalent of fancy golf carts. I mean, they're electrical. They certainly cost a whole lot less. If you're just putting around town going slow, you don't need them to be able to be licensed on highway. Mm-hmm. And they certainly are a whole lot less expensive than some of these other rigs.
Does
that make sense?
It's actually surprising that some of them aren't quite as inexpensive as you might think. But, like, for instance, we will be buying a new parking enforcement vehicle. And it's still, while it's small, it's electric and all of that, its cost is on par with something like a new pickup because of the low cost that we can get the pickups for. But in the right applications, absolutely. The problem is that we have very few things that the city does where that type of vehicle is the right thing.
Same yeah, it would be more like for vehicles. You guys going to meetings and that kind of stuff.
Oh, those are all Putting virtual now.
Yeah, this week. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
It's 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Gerving. Well, it's must have been a little interesting situation that you ran into in the last week or so with the now I'm referencing, you know, you'd mentioned Zoom meetings, the parking lot projects. I know that you've got a, you guys reference it as something different, but
right.
You know, actually, how do you reference it?
They're,
for everybody.
Yeah, they're affordable housing projects on city-owned lots.
Okay, mine's a lot shorter to say. Yeah. That's all I'll just say. Yeah. Stick with mine. what spurred this thing on?
Wow, that's a long explanation. I'll try and make it short. So the city is obligated to have what's called a housing element as part of our general plan. Same thing. Counties have to do it too. All the cities do. And this last round, there was a change in the way that cities and counties had to accommodate the state-required number of housing units for the next, I think, 8-year period is what we've got for our housing element, but don't quote me on that. And basically, rather than saying, okay, the lots in the city will accommodate this many units, we had to actually devise a plan to facilitate the construction of that many units over a certain period of time. And the way that the city chose to do that, what the city council adopted back in 2019 with the housing element, was a whole slew of implementation measures. One of them was some site-specific units that would be created on various city-owned properties, because those are the things that we have control over, right? We can't force people to build new units on properties they own, but we can facilitate construction on city-owned properties. So there were several city-owned properties, I think 12 or 13, that were listed in the housing element that would accommodate a certain minimum number of low-income and very low-income deed-restricted units. And the first request for proposals for the first 3 lots was done last year. The city council awarded the contract for that, or is in an agreement with a developer to develop, I believe it's 107 units of housing across those 3 lots. Now we're preparing for the next request for proposals to do the next 3 lots.
The 3 lots that are, let's call them fait accompli, too late to do anything unless there's an earthquake or a landslide, right, or mm-hmm. a sinkhole. One of them is on Myrtle.
Correct, Sunny and Myrtle.
And nobody knows where Sunny is.
By the domes, by the Tea Garden.
Yeah, the old Moody U parking lot. Sorry, going back a little bit, across from Alder Bay.
Yes.
That one, basically all it has there each year is a fireworks stand.
Correct.
Okay. I think that one, have you had any discussion, anybody take exception to that location?
Very little.
Okay, so you're within the sweet spot on that one.
Mm-hmm.
What's another one?
The other two that were part of the process last year are 6th and M Streets, which is a block away from City Hall. And
the overflow lot, so to speak?
Sure, yeah. And then 8th and G, which is down in the area of the Eureka Inn and McRae, that area.
Is that the one that's next to McRae's parking lot?
Behind
or display?
It. Yep.
Yeah. Depending on your reference, yes.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's another tiny footprint.
Both of those are similar in size. They're about a quarter block each. So, yeah.
So how many bodies or I guess living units would be the common? Do those accommodate?
Each of those at 6th and M and 8th and G, I don't know the exact number of units, but they have more than Sunny and Myrtle because they're taller buildings. They're going to be 6 stories tall. So it's a pretty significant number.
6 stories?
Mm-hmm.
What else in town is 6 stories?
In height, they'll be similar to other buildings, but I don't think there are any other buildings that are actually 6 stories. I think the most we've got is 5, with the courthouse has a 5th floor, and the professional building at 5th and F has
right.
a 5th
so
floor.
So they're going to be pretty recognizable.
They are.
Skyline, that kind of stuff, you're going to see these things.
Yeah, sure.
Now, you're displacing parking lots. The one on Myrtle, nobody parks in there anyway, so okay, fine.
Right.
You know, it may have a slight impact at lunchtime for the food places. Okay. The other two, much more regularly used. Are there any plans to compensate those businesses in that immediate area for this, or is it just it's taken off the rolls and you guys got to scramble and you've got to find places on the street?
So we did an analysis of the parking utilization of each of those lots before the request for proposals last year. And Sunny and Myrtle had very low utilization. 8th and G also had very low utilization. 6th and M, it was a higher number. It was up around 85%. So we said, okay, if we make those parking spaces go away, what's the capacity on street in that area? And what we found was that there was more than enough on-street parking within one block. Because you think about how many block faces are within one block of any given point, and you've got a lot of lineal footage there. So we could more than accommodate the parking that was regularly used in that lot with on-street parking. Won't be a problem. 8th and G, the same thing. Now, we did get concerns from folks. We've continued to get concerns from them. But I think that Eureka is somewhat unique in terms of just how easy it is to find parking
today.
In our downtown area.
30 years ago, it was a little different. Now, what about the residents? Because they're bringing vehicles also.
Well, maybe, maybe not. A lot of these folks, part of the some of the criteria for these places is near public transit, that kind of thing. And the zoning code that was adopted by the Planning Commission, by the City Council, actually says buildings of a certain type that have units that meet these certain standards don't have to provide their own parking. Now, these will have a little bit of their own.
We'll talk about that one when we come back. It's 8:30.
Hey, community. Times are rough right now. Retail shops may be closing, but the bulk flower market is still open and moving fast. We here at Bayer can help turn your flower harvest into cash today. Call Bayer Extraction House at 707-693-2222. That's 707-693-2222. Don't miss out. It is time to sell. Bayer Extraction House, your flower selling powerhouse.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Gerving. Interesting conversations during the breaks, always.
Always.
Let's get back to our parking project. One of the things I would suspect that is causing the some of the reactions that you're getting is the apparent lack of notification You know, in the old days, okay, 72 hours, it was posted at City Hall. There'd be press releases that would go out, and they would be all over the place. How were these meetings that were held this past week, or these ones for these three projects that were anticipated or, and that are now in process, how has that notification process changed? Because there's a perception that if you want everybody to know, there are ways. And if you don't want anybody to know, there are ways, both legal, but the intent's slightly different.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about the housing element. The housing element is what laid out this whole plan, the implementation measure in the housing element that said, here are the lots where we are going to build this many units, the certain minimum number of units for each of them. And that was a very, very robust public process. Hundreds of people at the Werfinger building talking about that. A joint session of the Planning Commission and City Council.
There was a lot of awareness of that, yes.
A lot of awareness, absolutely. Now, fast forward to 2020, when we're in the middle of COVID. And meetings, we're actually getting very good participation with public meetings. We oftentimes have several dozen people logged onto the meeting, similar to what you would have in person at a council meeting. Meetings are now, agendas now go out a week ahead of time as opposed to 3 days. That's part of something that the city implemented a couple of years ago. I can't tell you exactly when, but basically, even though the Brown Act only requires agendas to go out 72 hours ahead of time, we're going to do it a week ahead of time to be more transparent. There have been with like the 8th and G lot, that one, because it was acquired with parking assessment district funds, there had to be a specific public hearing with a specific radius notification to...
That's the 300-foot thing?
Yep, the 300-foot thing. Okay. So there was a mailer about that one. There were a number of people at that meeting, even though it was virtual. And I think that it has been an open and transparent process. Now, there's been another round of meetings this week about each of the three lots that were originally proposed to be done in the RFP this year. I wasn't involved in those. But
okay. And those three are, let's see, it was the Daly's parking lot.
Sorry, I have to go back. Fourth and G.
Right.
Fifth and D. And the third one, I can't remember off the
top of
my head.
Where Jim Howard used to have his shoe shine stand.
Oh, yeah. Third and D. Yeah, third and E.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess historical references, I don't, makes it clearer for me. I mean, right. Muddle it for others. Now, those are different because they are in the commercial, downtown, however you want. There's that aspect to it.
Sure. Fourth and G. And third and E, certainly those are busier lots. Fifth and D, not so much. However, the whole plan with this round of request for proposals was that the developer would be required to maintain at least the same number of publicly accessible parking spaces as currently exist in those lots.
So because these would be like parking downstairs and then everything else upstairs and
exactly.
Downstairs would be for public?
Correct.
Are they big enough?
Sure.
To be able to handle the structure on top of?
You'd have to have more than one level of parking, which is totally doable. Obviously increases the cost of construction. And we really don't know how that's going to impact the types of responses that we get to the RFP. Now, that being said, after some of the concern that came up in the past a little over a week, the plan has shifted, and now the 4th and G and 3rd and E lots are off the list for the time being, and instead we're leaving 5th and D on the list, which is down next to the Lloyd Building, and then adding to the list the two City Hall lots, 5th and K and 6th and L. And those were further down the list in the housing element, but they've been moved up because of some of this concern. And those will have the same requirement that.
So what are you going to do with the parking for City Hall? They still will go up and parking down on the lower level?
Exactly. There's still going to be the same requirement in the RFP that the same number of parking spaces that currently exist have to be maintained.
So the two lots that I guess are later, mm-hmm. are they off?
They're not off.
Or are they later?
They're later. And I think it's part of it will be what kind of responses do we get to this RFP with the requirement to leave parking in place? Because it's no secret that these buildings are very expensive. I mean, any construction is now. And when you look at the anticipated cost of the first three that we talked about, Sunny and Myrtle, 8th and G, 6th and M, they're expensive buildings. When you add to that the cost of maintaining parking below them, they're going to be that much more expensive. We acknowledge that. We don't know what it will do to the number of proposals that we get, but we'll see.
Now, are these city-owned facilities?
No. The lots are currently city-owned. And then in the RFP, at least the last one, and I haven't seen the one that's upcoming, we left it open to the developer. Do you want to lease the property? Do you want to buy the property? So they will, again, have that same option.
Maintenance of these things oftentimes, well, I mean, you know better than most of us. You've got buildings that are TLC from the landowner, and you've got those that are allowed to fall apart, and they fall apart quickly and get ugly really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in these that address the condition, the state of the condition, not from an ROI perspective, but from a community perspective, that these things aren't going to get trashed out, they aren't going to be falling apart, you're not going to have the broken windows, it's not going to look like some of the pictures we've seen from the European block with some of their housing?
Right. So I'm honestly not sure, and I don't want to give an incorrect answer. But what I can tell you is in looking at the projects that have been developed, and I want to be clear that when I'm saying projects, I don't mean what people think of when they think of housing projects, right?
Like Not the Humboldt County definition of a project.
Right.
A development.
It's a development, right?
Yeah.
It's a building. And the buildings that this developer has constructed, and if my memory is correct, they've built about 3,500 units in the past 10 or 15 years throughout California. They are very high-quality developments, and they've been very well-maintained. They actually changed some of what was in their original proposal when they came to the city's design review committee to make those buildings fit in better in Eureka. And they're going to be very attractive buildings. I'm looking forward to it. I think they're going to be a real positive addition to the community. And we'll see what we get with this next round for the next three lots.
So are you going to have the three built and then step back and see where things are? Or are these all kind of daisy-chained together?
It's more of an ongoing process, right? Assuming we get suitable proposals this year, they will basically be trailing a year behind the ones that are currently in process. And what the construction timeline might be for the ones that are currently out there, I honestly don't know. But they do have their design review approval. There's a public meeting coming up relatively soon. It's on the city's website about the Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities Grant that would go along with these first three properties that would construct some other improvements in the area to help support them and help to, again, better the community.
That's what I was, I guess. That's what we'll get to in the next, okay, fine. Commercial break. It's 8:44.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Brian Gerving from the City of Eureka. Brian, it was suggested, and it makes a ton of sense, and I kind of did a little digging on my own. Why not buy the Jacobs Junior High plot? There's a school there. There's grocery there. There's certainly plenty of space to be able to design whatever makes sense. Parking, now there is none. So whatever, you could accommodate whatever the needs would be just based on that. If with the kids, if there were enough to qualify for either an extension of Alice Burney or not, there's property, there's safety, you're not on the highways, not on the main drags. Why not Jacobs?
So you're right. It's relatively close to Winco. It's not as close to other shopping opportunities, and a lot of these other city-owned lots.
Well, let's presume Bayshore is alive.
Sure. Well, it's still. I think it's a longer distance than you think. When you look at the city's gridded network in the core area, it's, you know, you walk four blocks. That seems like a long way to walk. It's really only a quarter of a mile. And I think that these lots that are in the core area will be much more conducive to foot traffic and people not having cars, people walking to do what they need to do. The Jacobs Junior High site, that could be an option. At, you know, several years ago when there was the proposal to have a housing development there, it did not go over well in the neighborhood either. So, you know, there's no perfect answer. What we're trying to do is really diversify the amount of housing, increase the amount of housing, and diversify the types of housing that are available in Eureka.
So it's, you're working with a developer. ROI is always their bottom line. I mean, they're in business, and that's not a bad thing necessarily. So when they're looking at this, even with the increased cost of having parking underneath, it still pencils for them.
Well, we don't know. We haven't had, you know, we haven't put out this request for proposals yet. We certainly haven't gotten any responses, and we don't know what impact this requirement to maintain public parking will have on the types of responses.
So does that scuttle the project, or does that scuttle parking on the ground floor?
Well, that's a decision that hasn't been made yet, because it's strictly a hypothetical at this point.
Right. Okay, let's say it doesn't work. No, we can't do it that way. We can do it without parking on the bottom floor.
That would be a decision that the city council has to make at the time based on those specific circumstances, and we just don't have enough information yet.
And that's a public hearing also?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So the three properties they're going to be in there's going to be some construction going on shortly?
I don't know what the timeline is, and I don't want to give you an incorrect answer, but I wouldn't say it's imminent. But they do have design review approval. That was one box they needed to check in order to fit in with the funding programs that they're using for these properties, because it's a very intricate model, these affordable housing facilities, that they have to fit into in order to fund them and be able to construct them and you know, make money on them.
So you had the public hearings this past week. For three of the properties.
The ones coming up. And they weren't public hearings. Well, they were just meetings. They were kind of informational meetings.
Are there more of those scheduled for this month if people want to get on the boat now and try to find out what's going on?
I think there were meetings for each of those three sites that happened this week. I don't think there's anything else planned at this point, but I could be wrong.
So for the other six, it's down the road sometime?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right.
Okay. But there will be?
Yes.
All right. On the website, we'll be able to find those dates?
Well, they're not scheduled yet.
When they're available.
Yeah, the coming years.
Okay. Interesting week.
It has been.
Thanks for coming by.
Thankfully, not as interesting for me as it has been for some other people.
See everybody tomorrow morning.